about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
So, welcome to this episode of Eurobytes on the 2nd of February, 2025. So it's already February. And, well, I say this every single time, but we must have jumped in an alternate timeline where everything happens in fast motion. Quite often, horrible things happen that we couldn't even fathom. Like 4 years ago, where essentially we faced anarcho-tyranny on the streets of Europe and on the streets in the United States, where Antifa was cut loose. Why I'm mentioning this will be obvious in a second. Obviously, from a European perspective, it is also interesting to see if we were to leave the current paradigm, that it can be done and that we need to get out of the black-pilling mode. I mean, so far, the current administration in the United States have had an enviable pace, had tons of executive orders, which apart from being the right thing are also unbelievably entertaining in the way they're being applied. And that brings us back to Germany. And so European politics can be characterized, everybody says, well, in Europe, you're seeing a big shift to the right. And that may be true, but I think in Europe, we are maybe either where the United States was 4 years ago, or maybe even before that, where we're having the occasional triumph, but the other side is well entrenched and is not beyond stealing an election. So, such as we had Kurt on a couple of weeks ago, how it happened in Romania with the Constitutional Court, just throughout the election electoral results. In Germany, obviously, the stronger the AfD gets, the more we're hearing calls or doubling down of the calls to ban the AfD. But we've seen actually an interesting permutation. So I would almost say we are where the United States was 4 years ago, where the deep state is well entrenched. And it's actually a deep state that is, relative to the economy, to the size of the economy, far better funded. So, I mean, there's tons of, you guys might all remember, there's the identitarian activist Martin Zellner from Austria. He spoke at a conference about remigration. And interesting enough, there was a NGO. And whenever you hear NGO, non-governmental organization, you kind of need to take that with a pinch of salt, because they're usually all funded by governmental organization, which is why it's so great that the incoming Trump administration has paused a lot of the developmental aid, because it went through a whole slew of hundreds of NGOs in Germany. At that time, it was an NGO by the name of Corrective, which, you know, if you think that sounds eerily Marxist, because it is, there's even some Soros money involved. Strange how that always happens. And so we had an interesting debate in the German parliament. So those who listened last week, Lucas and I mentioned that obviously the CDU, which essentially is the Republican Party before Trump, very rhino country club Republicans, they have a new quote-unquote far right or further to the right leader, Mr. Merz, And a lot of the normies placed high hopes in him. He's finally going to do something. And right enough, there was a law called the Influx Limitation Act. So Influx of Migration Limitation Act, a bill limiting or attempting to limit migration into Germany. That bill failed by 349 votes against 338 votes. So that would have been Friedrich Merz's masterpiece to actually show that he wasn't just a Marco Rubio, even though, I don't know, probably Marco Rubio at least was visited the January 6th persons in prison. So I'm gonna pick the, he wasn't pick whatever Rhino Republican you want to. So that's where he could prove that he was actually conservative. It looked like that the CDU was gonna vote for this law with the votes of the AfD. And would you know what then happened? Angela Merkel came out from the cold, quite literally. She lives somewhere deep in East Germany.
Came back from East Germany.
Yes, indeed. I mean,
somewhere from behind the Iron Curtain.
You can't make it up. I mean, we should get an interesting guy on who works for a dissident right German newspaper by the name of Hinrich Rohbaum. He's actually written a book and he's still convinced that Mrs. Merkel is a sleeper. And the older I get, the more I'm amenable to that interpretation. But right enough. So Mrs. Merkel, just like in every spy movie, I think what was that movie called? The Spy That Came From the Cold or something like that. From the cold in the small village in East Germany. That one. So she came back from the cold from East Germany, and she had done, and then she then kind of whistled her dogs back, and she said, "This is unacceptable." And she always had this kind of, I mean, always saying, "We're being governed by a bunch of Karens and kindergarten Karens," mm-hmm. who are like bad Merz. So that was sort of the whole model of him being lectured. This is absolutely unacceptable. How could you? This is not what we stand for.
But the let me just interject. It shows that the CDU was actually willing to come forward and help in this legislation, am I right? Even though they were shot down in the end.
You are correct. And I mean, I think there were 11 CDU MPs who didn't vote for it, so not all that many of them did actually vote against it, and most of the FDP, the Libertarian Party that claims to be libertarian, but again, given that they formed a coalition with a pretty Marxist government, i.e. the Greens and the Social Democrats, increasingly their libertarian credentials are long gone, but yeah, they voted against it, and so as I said, it was a very tight vote, so the CDU was actually willing to do it. So as I said, the bill failed, 349 votes against, 338 in favor of the law. So very tight, but again, so Merkel's voice from the cold was enough to whistle back some of her CDU persons. And then obviously now the propaganda war is being ramped up. So there was a Social Democrat spokesperson who said, please shut the gates of hell. It has been the Holocaust Memorial. So for the love of God, shut the gates of hell again. And the whole bill failed. And then, you know, there's light and there's shadow in it. So as you correctly said, Todd, yes, the CDU was for once willing to do something. But again, it is still not where it needs to be. And it's in its very own interest. But there is still light at the end of the tunnel because, as I keep pointing out, yes, the deep state in Germany is deeply entrenched. It's well funded with a lot of, compulsory television license fees. You just, you know, you cannot not pay for the German state television, even if you don't watch it. Even if you tell people I don't have a television, they're like, "Well, do you have a smartphone?" "Yes." "Well, then you need to pay." I'm like, "I'm not watching. It doesn't matter." Whereas in the United Kingdom, it is actually possible to just about wiggle out. But anyway,
well, we're about to have change in the US with NPR and all of this as well, but we'll see. Oh,
brilliant. Yes. So the deep state is well entrenched, as I said, well funded through a slew of NGOs, partially overlapping with George Soros and such.
So let me ask you, where does this leave us with the AfD being banned I mean, you when you have such a move, the Overton window, with a large portion of CDU coming towards AFD on this legislation,
yeah,
does that give them some kind of buffer to prevent any legislation from banning them?
No, and I mean, I'm not sure he would grandstand, because then it is essentially a complex process where our Interior Intelligence Agency, the Constitutional Protection Agency, as it's euphemistically called, apparently they are increasingly gathering evidence. Is the AFD against our constitution?
That's kind of like the Department of Economic Competition in Atlas Shrugged, right?
It's very similar.
It is.
And I mean, like, obviously the left always goes like, oh, this is reminiscent of fascism and this is opening the gates of hell. But you know, for the viewers that have watched The Life of the Others, which essentially is about a Stasi, an East German secret agent, mm-hmm. listening on people's conversation, that's much more akin to that. And interesting enough, and I was going to mention a glimpse of hope before I'm going to segue into the more concerning bit. So the glimpse of hope, as I always point out, the enemy is well-funded, well-entrenched, absolutely ruthless, willing to do a bit of double speak. So it's yay, my democracy. And at the same time, well, let's ban the party that would reform it. And what they did, so obviously the Green Party and the SPD were grandstanding. And I looked on Facebook, and I do have normie friends who even are members of the FDP, and they all jump on that bandwagon. Fascist, 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 how can you? At the same time, there's something interesting. So preliminary polling shows the AFD at 23%, which is the highest it has ever been. Now that people see that the CDU won't be able to help the AFD's aims, I expect that to rise before the elections. I think the elections are in roughly 3 weeks. So I expect that to rise. So I think normies are cluing in that it can't be done with the CDU. But there's another interesting question, because the SPD and the Greens are now all dogpiling on the CDU. How dare you? How could you? They'll probably, with that deed, will reduce the percentage of the CDU even further. It might very well be, not beyond the realms of the possible, the AFD might turn out to be the strongest party, and that the Greens, through both people who had hopes in the CDU to reduce migration, and people who and by the campaign of the Green Party and the SPD, the percentage of the CDU will be further lowered. But that would mean bring us to an interesting situation. So the FDP, the libertarian one, won't clear the threshold that is necessary in Germany to be represented in parliament. You need at least 5% of the votes. If you don't, you're not in parliament. They've got 3% of the votes, because they had forsaken their libertarian ideals by joining that coalition roughly 3 years ago. So there will be an interesting situation where we might very well have the AfD being the strongest party, but nobody joining into a coalition with them, certainly. But all the other three remaining parties, and there is another wild card, which is sort of a somewhat migration critical left party, or that pretends to be migration critical, of that woman Sarah Wagenknecht. So the question is very much, do all of them combined have enough votes to outvote the AFD? So that'll be interesting. And how will they form a coalition? So I'm not sure they have done themselves a favor by what they did, by last minute tanking the CDU proposal, which I still think would have been a pretty tame proposal. It would have been nothing quite like what Trump is suggesting. And, you know, the bureaucracy works a lot slower in Germany. Be that as it may, now you remember at the beginning I mentioned 2020, summer of Floyd, or was it 2021? One of them, 2 years, summer of Floyd. So where the Biden administration cut loose its stormtroopers, mm-hmm. classic anarcho tyranny, and especially in Portland and in Seattle. And what we'd seen in two cities, in pretty much a number of German cities, there were demonstrations, big demonstrations against the CDU. And in Leipzig, people chanted slogans, "We hate the CDU, we hate the CDU." The CDU headquarters in Hanover had been stormed by Antifa. And interesting enough, there's an interesting picture that I want to show you guys. There's obviously a YouTube video. If I can share it, let me quickly present it. Share screen. And it should be a Todd. I think you could share it on my behalf.
Okay, I have to do it. Hold on a second. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to talk people through it. Yes. So the ones who are watching, what you will be seeing is you're seeing pretty much the default Antifa look. So hooded people with face masks standing on a balcony, which is the CDU headquarters in Hanover. What you're seeing right next to it in that black outfit is not an Antifa person. It's actually the police. The police somehow in Germany over the last couple of years started wearing black outfits. Make of that what you want. I'm just saying, yes. I mean, even the look is that of the Cheka, the old Tsarist secret police. But yes, so there's a German policeman standing here next to them. Todd, he's facing the Antifa people with the back. Does he, to you, look like he's doing much about it, them being there?
No.
So essentially, let me see if there's the morbids were. So again, you see.
You know, there was a lot of evidence we put out a few years ago that there were roots to Antifa in the U.S. all the way back to Germany.
Watching my friends gain more and more weight, and then eventually I got to tell you, this is a little dark, but a bad diet literally killed my whole crew.
Wow.
Diabetes, a stroke, I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's like, you had a stroke? You're not even 50 years old. You guys got to quit eating this stuff. Your body knows what's what. You're right. Not conscious of this. But that's why people will go to the refrigerator and they'll grab this and that and the other and put together this outrageously elaborate combination of foods. Your body's trying to reach balance. Unbeknownst to us, our bodies are always trying to reach homeostasis. You can't eat all of this stuff and expect to live a long time. And one thing led to another, and I went, you know, forget this, we're going to make our own product. So we partnered with one of the world's top three biochemists where nutrition specific study is concerned. I said, all I want is the best nutritional immune support product in the world. So we mix it in yogurt. It's a powder. I got a bag of it here. I keep one on the console all the time, you know, just so I can show people.
Yeah.
And it's a powder. Now, this is not candy. This is hardcore nutrition. And sugar is an enemy. And most people do not know that the reason these bellies are showing up on people all over the place, your body makes fat to store the toxins it can't get rid of. So it just puts them over here. But I can tell you this, you take this for 30 days and then lay off of it for 2 or 3 days and you'll go, good grief, give me some more. Skin, nails, hair growing back. Cut yourself and it heals in half the time.
It might very well be. Yeah.
So bottom line too, before we get into that, so again, just to highlight to the viewers what they're seeing. So say if we had a bunch of actual right-wing demonstrators, say a bunch of AFD people had stormed a Green Party HQ, there would have been skulls cracked by the police. I mean, they would have been dragged out. And here, I mean, everywhere throughout this video, you can see them standing about. So again, in the next picture, you see them blockading the CDU headquarters, sitting, chilling on the ground. And you see to the left of them, again, police standing next to them. So it's not forceful cracking of skulls. So we're having the situation where the attack by the mainstream is threefold. First of all, we've got the old grandees, the likes of Merkel, coming back from the cold and whistling to whatever few loyalists that she still has, but it's still enough. Then you've got the other parties dogpiling on it, the state television. Again, saying, "Well, don't you remember? It was yesterday, the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, and how can you? How dare you?" So we've got that, and if that wasn't enough, we've got the stormtroopers now being unleashed, and that probably gets us into what you just mentioned. If you could quickly walk us through the roots of Antifa going back to Germany.
Yeah, so we had a reporter, an American actually, who was in Donbass, who was doing a lot of reporting on the roots of Antifa, and there were breadcrumbs, as he called it, you know, a lot of it on this on the internet, as far as leaving metadata, et cetera, where a lot of this came from. And it's fascinating. You know, there were Antifa let me take a step back. There's also tied to Ukraine, because a lot of the biggest, migration of Ukrainian people in the U.S. was to Seattle. And then the thought is that there were a lot of Ukrainian nationalists brought in as Antifa, and then they were also a J6. So there was groups of them speaking that language going into the congressional buildings, et cetera. So there's a lot of breadcrumbs on this. We can dig out the reporting and look at it on the next show, but I'll do that. But it's fascinating. And then there are people in the parliament in Germany who have these connections. So we'll talk about that next time.
Oh, absolutely. I think we should dedicate some space to that, because it is really a threefold defense. Interesting enough, in this time, the collapse of the old system and the deep state, and let's not jubilate too early, but certainly in the US was so complete that they didn't even bother unleashing their stormtroopers. Doesn't mean that they're not still there and can wait for opportune moments to come through.
Exactly. Yes.
I think the worst thing we can do on the dissident right is just, well, no, we should celebrate the wins we're getting. We haven't had a lot of that over the last couple of years, and there's some magnificent wins coming out of the Trump Association. And I think it shows what definitely AfD and plenty of other European parties are missing. I think a lot of them still think they just get voted in and then just work by the rules and change things in parliament. And whereas the Trump administration this time, they were well prepared. They had essentially had a drawer to open and hit the other side so hard that their head was spinning on so many different theaters of war, as it were. I don't think we, AfD or FPÖ in Austria, or even the Italian ones, or Front National in France, is that prepared yet, even. That focus, that ideologically prepared, having the policies ready.
What about reform in the UK? What about Nigel?
Well, so reform is an interesting one. I mean, they are so far the best by membership. The membership of reform has exploded over the last couple of months. Interesting enough, you sometimes have Gen Xers who think they can lecture boomers like Nigel Farage about, ha, 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 you're not really tech savvy, you don't understand how the internet works. And even, I mean, people leverage the same against Donald Trump, who understood the value of Twitter well before any of them did. And an interesting thing happened. So there is the darling of the Tory party, a woman of Nigerian origin, and she got into a Twitter spat with Nigel Farage, where Reform started having a counter of how quickly members joined them. And she's like, oh, well, that is obviously, there's some bit of fakery going on, and there might very well have been. It's hard to do it live, but that's not the point. The point is saying, look, we're going, this is not a live feed, but it, directionally, it shows where they're headed. And they're now beyond where the Tories are. So that is good. The interesting bits, obviously, Nigel quite often horrifies. Nigel's still a boomer, and he therefore horrifies a lot of the young Gen Xers, millennials, and Zoomers by saying very tame things. So he's like, "Well, look, I'm not going to commit to mass deportations, because the country by 2050 will have such a sizable Muslim percentage of the Muslim population that we might as well just start catering to that." He didn't say catering, but something along those lines. So a lot of the party members are like, well, you increasingly sound like a Tory. Mm-hmm. So there are question marks. But there's another guy emerging who is actually quite based in his tweets by the name of Rupert Lowe. And Rupert Lowe has tweets that would be Trump-worthy, and he's actually getting out there, and he's actually
what's his position?
Asking for... Say again?
What's his position?
Yes, I think he's just a parliamentarian. I don't think he's got any office in the party. And he defected from the Tories, but he's very, very based. And so right now, I mean, there's still some internal party arguments going on where there was another talented guy by the name of Ben Habib who left the party. He said, look, Nigel's making this just a Nigel Farage show. He said he was going to democratize the party, and he hasn't. So in that sense, it's kind of up in the air which direction reform will head. I mean, my personal preference on the one hand would be Rupert Lowe leading the policy, but Nigel Farage, there's nobody who understands timing and understands the actual politics behind policy as well as Nigel Farage does. So it remains to be seen if reform is the party that can do it. But again, they have eclipsed the Tories and they've eclipsed Labour as the strongest party. And I mean, if you go on their homepage, it keeps ticking up. So I mean, but again, even in the UK, obviously the deep state has not been idle and is turning increasingly authoritarian. And you know, the speech, the crackdown on free speech is ever increasing. And so even there we're facing the same problem, really.
Wow, interesting. We're going to watch that. We're going to stay on it for sure. And we're going to rely on you to keep us up to speed what's happening in the UK.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, interesting enough, I would like to point out a couple of things which are really, really interesting in the UK. I mean, we've still got roughly 5 minutes. So just to walk you through a couple of bits. I mean, so the enemy is powerful, but fortunately, due to them having weakened themselves by DEI and Keir Starmer very often not listening to Tony Blair, who was the absolute master, the absolute Machiavellian master, who always signaled right and then, you know, turned left. But Keir Starmer can't even do that. It is really interesting what's happening right now in the UK. So there's lots of activism going on. So obviously the one thing that reform should be screaming about far more than they are, but Elon Musk fortunately has been for a while, but obviously he's now got other fish to fry, namely the German election, for instance, is they refuse to, so after the whole the investigation of the grooming investigation had been brought up again, and a lot of a lot more cases were being made known, and it is what had been said since 2011. And Tommy Robinson, who again I think is in prison, had been absolutely heroic, pointing out the industrial scale mass rape of young British working class girls, many of as young as 12. So they once a lot of these cases recently came out again, and more data, more files were being leaked. The Parliament, rightfully, Reform and part of the Tory party asked for release, starting a new grooming gang investigation. And Labour said, no, we had already done a grooming gang investigation. They're like, no, you did a general child abuse investigation, but you didn't focus directly on Pakistani gangs mass raping young British girls and sex trafficking them through the United Kingdom, and the police and social workers being too cowardly because they were afraid of being called racist. So therefore we should have an investigation in that. And Labour again, but we've done that for Rotherham. Rotherham was the first city where that was made known, but it was in probably 50 other British cities, and many aren't big cities. I mean, Rotherham isn't a big city. I think it's maybe 100,000, and if like I think 3,000 young girls were being groomed, you get an appreciation for the magnitude of that problem. And that Labour then would have the nerves saying, no, we've already done that. It would not add anything. This is despicable. And reform should be jumping on that far more than they are. So that's that bit interesting enough. Then Labour these days always comes out with some sort of activism showing, well, we're doing something, but not quite the real thing. So yesterday they came forward saying, well, from now on, child abuse images that are AI generated have been banned, which is great. But again, I'm like, well, that is terrible. and it's good that you're banning it, but it's far more terrible what happened to the actual real life girls. So why are you still not doing that?
Yeah.
So again, Labour, I still think it might be the one thing that could tank Labour if we keep it in the news cycle. Then there's another interesting bit. Where for once I almost need to protect Labour a teeny tiny bit. Where they're trying. So they're saying, look, let's expand Heathrow Airport, that gigantic airport near London. Let's do that. We had been blocking that and had been blocked for years due to environmental concerns that would add tens of thousands of jobs. True. So they're trying to do that. And at the same time, they're getting criticized by the Tories for not securing a plant of one of the vaccine producers, AstraZeneca, that Swedish-British pharmaceutical company. They wanted something like a grant of 100 million or something like that to build a new factory in the UK. Labour didn't give that to them. And then AstraZeneca said, well, other countries are paying us more. Bye-bye. And a lot of Tories are jumping on that. Ha-ha, you see, Labour are economically incompetent. But again, I mean, I would kind of say, well, that kind of shows how Keynesian in their outlook the Tories are. Rather than saying, well, look, rather than bribing companies to come here, why don't we just lower the taxes? And Labour just had risen the taxes, the national insurance tax, considerably, meaning a lot of sectors are laying off people left, right, and center, especially the hospitality sector, where the margins are just very small. So we're still in this weird Keynesian mindset, like, oh well, we need to pay companies so they come here, rather than saying, hey, rather than giving
them money. You haven't had enough pain yet. I mean, we had a lot of pain in the US, and I'm not sure that Europeans have or maybe the elites haven't experienced pain. I don't know, but you know, we had enough, and I'm not sure Europe has yet.
I would make the argument that, well, so Germany certainly hasn't experienced enough pain. Definitely not the elites, definitely not the common people, but the explosions are getting closer, obviously. I mean, it's always small cities. My sister used to live in a small city in northern Bavaria, and I think within within a year, there were two attacks in this formerly idyllic, small, baroque city by some sort of Somali guy who started stabbing people, and one Afghan guy who attacked people. I think a group of Hong Kongese visitors, interestingly enough, in a train with an axe. So increasing, you do read in the newspapers about that. But I mean, what keeps Germans less alarmed? If you live in the countryside and the jobless rate is not yet terrible because a lot of the boomers have retired, and that opens up a lot of positions. And with the migration, I mean, probably the 5 million or so people from outside the EU we let in the country, you get a lot of bullshit jobs created for them. I mean, I have friends who, never bothered taking their teaching exams or their teaching credentials, and suddenly they're being offered jobs to work with them as social workers, as this, as that, as bureaucrats. And so people are not feeling enough pain. I would still
that's the state just capturing people, right, with fake money. I mean,
well, definitely true in Germany. And in the UK, that is probably only true for the middle class. Whereas if you're saying not enough pain, I would say no. I mean, they're pretty much in the UK, the main economy is the Greater London area. And then you've got some pockets of excellence, say Manchester and probably Edinburgh and Glasgow to a degree. But then you've got plenty of places in the north that are just pretty grim. They're kind of like your Rust Belt. I mean, I remember once my wife and I, heard that when we lived in Birmingham, UK, not Birmingham, Alabama, we heard that Staffordshire as a county was very pretty to visit. So we went to the town of Stafford, and we arrived at the train station, and we asked the employee of the local train company, hey, what can we do in Stafford like for a day out? And they're like, why would you do that? and they're like, she's like, look, there's nothing there. And well, right enough, we walked past the train station. You could still see a pretty gorgeous Victorian park where still some rich folks from Victorian times still had set up a trust that this park gets maintained with birds and all kind of stuff like that. And we walked into the town, and the town looked great. It must have been quite a place once upon a time when they had the textile mills and everything.
Yeah.
You walk through it and it's boarded up, and you see the people sitting outside of the cheapest sort of pubs. I mean, there's a pub that I myself like because it has cheap beer called Weatherspoons, but that's where people hang out. And then, I mean, they're still terrific people, but you walk around and people don't look healthy. You see the city boarded up. You see the gorgeous houses just being derelict. And so, yeah, there are plenty of places in the UK that where people feel the pain, but obviously they're not politically connected. They're not being listened to. But I mean, as I said, in the case of Germany, the explosions are getting closer in terms of, I mean,
maybe Elon Musk won't be able to help. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, even places where you didn't see a trace of, say, migration, like Glasgow, Edinburgh, like just like 6 years ago when I still used to live there, you do now see traces of that. So it's one of these. I guess it's the same in the United States where nobody listened to the Rust Belt. People were even made fun of. And I mean, you know, those were the accents you could make fun of. You had a South Park episode where, oh, they took our job. And then, you know, ha ha ha, funny. But I mean, fortunately, that regime change, once probably, I guess, fentanyl made its way into almost mainstream middle class America, I think a lot of folks started
to pay
attention.
That's part of it. Yeah.
And then I guess J.D. Vance coming from the Rust
Belt. The crime, just the straight up crime and murder and you know, often, which is happening in Germany too, obviously. But
I mean,
Christian, I have to go. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
We'll show today because we're short manned, but we'll be back next Sunday.
Absolute pleasure. And next Sunday, probably we'll dive deeper into the whole Antifa thing. We'll see how that
Let's develops. You know, I'll try to get Gawain Taller on too, so he needs to come back on the show.
Cool.
So, great. All right. Take care, sir. Ciao.
And you. Thank you. Bye. Forever and ever.